you begin losing your capacity to positively influence others' lives. In a word, to lead. Ben flashed back on his long walk through the city the day before, and his muddy sense that he was not seeing the whole elephant, that there was some larger perspective missing. He had the feeling he was hearing that larger perspective right now. Thomas J. Bushnell spoke up again.
The two brothers told us that when they heard you speak, it jarred something loose in their thinking. It made them wonder if maybe they were holding on too desperately to the company's reins, trying too hard to keep things the way they always had been.
Aunt Elle now chimed in. They said that perhaps they had forgotten what the central word is in their slogan, "We hold you up." Not we, and not hold, but you.
Thomas J. nodded and finished the thought. The brothers said they realized you were right. It's not about us, they said. It's not about the chairs, and not even about the people who make the chairs. It's about the people who buy our chairs, the people we hold up. This isn't our business, ultimately. It's their business.
Thomas J. Bushnell paused in thought, then mused.
As Mother says, the best way to increase your influence is to give it away.
He glanced at Aunt Elle, who acknowledged the comment with a nod. Pindar's paradox, she said. My father taught me something, she added, something I have tried very hard never to forget. Whatever great parenting looks like, it is not about the parent. Great teaching is not about the teacher. Great coaching is not about the coach. And great leadership? Well, she glanced at Ben, you can fill in that blank. In fact, I believe you already have.
Both Bushnells, mother and son, ceased speaking and gazed into the fireplace.
Ben felt the heat from the logs and heard the tiny pop-pop of air pockets in the wood expanding and exploding. He had no idea what to say, or if he should say anything.
Suddenly, Thomas J. spoke up again. Ben, your career at Mergers and Acquisitions is over. You're out, effective immediately.
Now Ben thought his head was going to go pop, just like a log in the fireplace. He had expected to be fired, but not quite so abruptly.
I understand, sir.
He began reaching into his jacket pocket once more.
I actually came here prepared to—
Good, continued Bushnell, because we have something else for you. Once again Ben froze, his hand on the letter.
Something else?
Yes.
You've heard, I suppose, that the Allen and Augustine vote last night went well?
Sir? Ben was lost. Went well?
Even given this bizarre account of the two brothers' late-night visit to the Marden office, he assumed that after his unexpected exit from the board meeting, the merger had been roundly voted down.
Yep, said Thomas J. First count, over 80%. After a few minutes' discussion, they requested the right to vote again. Second count, unanimous. The papers are being drawn up as we speak. Allen and Augustine is about to become part of the Marden Group.
Ben was so stunned at this turn of events that for a moment he forgot all about what Bushnell had been saying about Ben's dismissal before he reported on the vote outcome. A loud crack from the fireplace startled him and jogged that thought loose again.
Hang on, he blurted. You said you have something else for me?
Thomas J. grunted in assent. The yes vote came with a condition. They wanted one thing. We promised we'd do our best to deliver it.
Which was?
If they're going to be part of another company, Ben, they want someone new leading them. The brothers agreed.
Aunt Elle now spoke up again. The brothers also said they wanted to come over last night in order to bring something for you.
Something for me?
And then Aunt Elle smiled. Not an almost smile, not that Sphinx expression, but an actual, radiant, frost-melting, pull-out-all-the-stops smile.
You're sitting in it, the first chair. That's yours now. And Allen said to tell you this, that you'd understand what he meant.
Maybe, he said, it's time to move to a bigger building.
The first chair?
His?
Close your mouth, said Aunt Elle. You'll catch flies.
Ben felt the smooth wood surfaces holding him and remembered something Alan had said when they first met. Was it really only a week ago? In his 8th-floor office. The only reason we still have that chair is that we gave it away. Had Alan been talking about the leadership of his own company without even realizing it at the time? The more you give away, he remembered Aunt Elle saying, the more you have. Was that it? Was that the piece he'd felt was missing, the whole elephant of leadership, and not just different aspects of it? Thomas sent you over there last week, Aunt Elle said softly, because he knew you were a man who knew how to take leadership in tough circumstances. And that you were. But sometimes it's not about taking leadership. Sometimes it's about giving leadership. She paused for a moment, one eyebrow raised, waiting to see if Ben had any response to offer. Giving? Ben's voice cracked. His mouth had gone dry. He cleared his throat and tried again. Giving leadership? Aunt Elle waved one hand as if to say, it's everywhere around us, like the air. See? Giving leadership, she said, is about empowering others, about holding them up. And not only those in what you might call leadership positions. You can give leadership to your child, to a member of your work group, to a friend, to anyone. When you believe in someone, when you promote them, champion them, respect their ideas, you give them leadership. And it's also a special kind of leading, like servant leadership. Giving leadership is a leadership style, but also more than that. It's a way of being. Aunt Elle reached over and patted one of Ben's hands. Ben, you said you always wanted to meet the chairman? Ben nodded vaguely, feeling as if he were in a dream, which, in a way, he supposed he was. Well, Aunt Elle pushed her glasses up on her nose and peered through them at Ben. Now, you are the chairman. Ben almost reached up and pinched his own cheek, just to make sure he was really there. He glanced over at Thomas J., looking for confirmation that what his mother was saying meant what Ben thought it meant. Bushnell just shrugged his shoulders, as if to say, hey, you heard the lady. Aunt Elle got to her feet and turned toward Ben. I think it's time we sent you off to meet with your executive team. She put her hand on his shoulder and looked into his stunned face. As a friend of mine says, your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. And that you did. Last night, you gave them leadership. She smiled again, and, for the first time in Ben's memory, gave a little laugh. And now, they're giving it to you.
Ben's Manifesto. Ben's Keys to Legendary Leadership. Key number 1. Hold the vision. Key number 2. Build your people. Key number 3. Do the work. Key number 4. Stand for something. Key number 5. Practice giving leadership.
Hold the vision. Lead with your mind. Anyone can come up with a vision. The hard part is the holding. Building a business, building anything, is an act of faith. Keep seeing in your mind's eye where it is you're going, even when nobody else does, especially when nobody else does. Never forget where you came from. And watch your personal pronouns.
Build your people. Lead from the heart. Give people something good to live up to, something great, and they usually will. The more you yield, the more power you have. The substance of influence is pull, not push. Tact is the language of strength. And don't react, respond.
Do the work. Lead from your gut. Know your pegs and shims. Stay hugely humble. Stay grounded. Get mud on your boots. And trust yourself.
Stand for something. Lead with your soul. What you have to give, you offer least of all through what you say, in greater part through what you do, but in greatest part through who you are. Competence matters. Character matters more. Character is what happens when life scratches itself onto your soul. You can lead only as far as you grow, and you will grow only as far as you let yourself.
Practice giving leadership. Don't get it backwards. Don't start thinking you're the deal. Great leadership is never about the leader. Great leadership is about holding people up. The best way to increase your influence is to give it away. The more you give, the more you have.
A Go-Giver Leader Discussion Guide. Many of our readers have explored the Go-Giver books together in their book clubs, business study groups, houses of worship, and community groups, or among friends and family. The questions below may be helpful in guiding your discussion of the Go-Giver Leader. Number 1. Ben hoped meeting with Claire might illuminate the internal politics at Allen and Augustine, the inside scoop, as he puts it. Do you think that, in any sense, his plan succeeded?
Number 2. Ben meets each one of Allen and Augustine's 4 executives in a different location. How do you think each of these 4 locations reflects each executive's unique approach to leadership? What strengths and weaknesses do you see in each location's perspective?
Number 3. When Ben meets with the 4 executives, what is each one's position on the pending merger? How do their positions reflect each of those 4 individuals? Where do they each stand by the time of the final meeting? Which of the 4, if any, do you suppose might have been most influential in the final outcome of the vote?
Number 4. Aunt L tells Ben that the substance of influence is pull, not push. What do you think that means? What examples have you seen where someone has strongly influenced you by pull rather than by push? What examples of famous leaders can you think of who have exerted great influence through pull more than through push?
Number 5. Aunt L tells Ben, the more you yield, the more power you have. How many specific examples of this being demonstrated can you see throughout the story? Are there any examples of times this has happened in your experience?
Number 6. Loss is a recurring theme in the story. Allen and Augustine lost everything, or nearly everything, in a fire years ago. Ben and Melanie lost a child. Phoebe in accounting loses her grandmother. All the employees at Allen and Augustine are worried they'll lose their company. And of course, Ben is concerned that he may lose his job. What do you think the book is saying about loss?
Number 7. As the story of surviving the church fire illustrates, Allen has a gift for painting a picture so clearly that others see it, and for holding on to it so faithfully that others can follow it through thick and thin. Can you think of examples of people who've done that for you?
Number 8. Allen tells Ben that the most important thing for a leader is to never forget where you came from. A little later, he says a leader's biggest job is to hold the picture of where you're going. Do you think that's a contradiction? Why? Or why not? What do these 2 things have in common?
Number 9. Augustine has a strong ability to see and bring out the greatness in others. Do you know anyone who has that ability? Has anyone ever done that for you?
Number 10. Augustine tells Ben that applying heat to wood brings out its inner colors, while applying belief to people is what brings out their hidden qualities. Have you ever experienced that? At what point in the story, if any, does Ben apply that insight?
Number 11. Give people something good to live up to, Augustine tells Ben. Something great, and they usually will. Have you seen any examples of this in your own experience?
Number 12. Rachel reports Pindar saying that all the voltage flowing through his life doesn't fry his circuits because he stays grounded. Do you know anyone you consider a leader who fits that description?
Number 13. Karen concludes her meeting with Ben by asking, "Where do you stand, Ben? And what do you stand for?" Does she ever get an answer? If so, when? And what would you say it is?
Number 14. Ben ends up going into Phoebe and Accounting's grandmother's hospital room, even though he hates hospitals, and stays for nearly 2 hours. Why does he do this? Do you think he knows why he does it? What impact do you think this visit has on Ben?
Number 15. What is it about the Canada geese Ben hears and sees that captures his attention? Why do you think their honking seems to him the most beautiful sound he has ever heard?
Number 16. Ben had an extremely well-thought-out speech prepared for the big meeting in Chapter 13. If he had delivered it the way he planned, what do you suppose would have happened? Why?
Number 17. Talking about the first chair they ever made, Alan points out that the only reason they still have it is that they gave it away. Later, it occurs to Ben that perhaps Alan was also talking about the leadership of his company. Can you think of other things in life that you can continue to have only by giving away?
Q&A with the authors. One of the best things about the experience of writing the GoGiver books is the thousands of great questions we received and continue to receive from our readers via email or after presentations on stage. Here are some of the most frequent questions we've heard about the GoGiver leader, along with our best effort to answer them.
What led you to want to write about leadership?
We've both been fascinated by leadership all our lives. We have each had the opportunity to interview, and in some cases personally work with, scores of some of the greatest leadership thinkers and teachers of our time. For both of us, though, our greatest source of insight and inspiration on leadership has been our parents. Bob's dad created a business that was, on the surface of it, a sports, self-defense, and confidence-building school for kids. But it really served more as a school of life, for kids and their parents, too. John's dad was a much-beloved choral conductor, as vivid an example of follow the leader as we can think of. Both were amazing examples of go-giver leadership, loved and looked up to by many. Bob's mom led their employees and her children with love, constant encouragement, and a solution focus to any and every challenge. John's mom was a teacher and playwright who directed children in the plays she wrote. She used to tell John, "You can accomplish anything you set out to do," and he believed her. You could say she gave him leadership.
Is the GoGiver leader based on a true story?
While this is a parable, as with the GoGiver, most of the characters and situations are based on characters we know and scenarios we've experienced or observed. Aside from real-life tidbits, like the Lincoln and Churchill quotes and the Lee Heron story, many of the story's details, the boxing experience, the abysmal public speaking advice Andel got from her father, the martial arts tournament, the disarming of the angry customer, the dying grandmother's hospital room, and more, are drawn from our lives. Far more important, the principles are true.
Are Alan and Augustine based on real people?
Not literally, yet they are in several senses. For one thing, we borrowed their names from the very real James Allen, author of that great classic As a Man Thinketh, and Augustine Og Mandino, author of The Greatest Salesman in the World, and many more. These two men certainly represent vision and heart about as well as anyone we've ever encountered. Also, if you ever met the two of us in person, you might notice something oddly familiar about the slender, soft-spoken gentleman and the barrel-chested man with the warm welcome and two-fisted handshake.
Where do the five keys to legendary leadership come from?
Like the five laws of stratospheric success in The Go-Giver, the five keys are drawn from our experiences and observations in business and in life, and from the wisdom and experience of teachers too numerous to list. The first three, leading from the head, the heart, and the gut, have been with us for years. The fourth, stand for something, lead with your soul, is a little different. Like the fourth law of stratospheric success in The Go-Giver, the law of authenticity, it is more personal and intimate. It gives the first three keys more depth. As with the fifth law in The Go-Giver, key number five, practice giving leadership, came as something of a surprise to us and emerged gradually from the process of writing the story. We knew there was, most likely, a fifth key. We just didn't know exactly what it would look like. Key number five is what makes the other four work. Taken together, they are four fingers and thumb. Leadership is like love. When you hoard it, it withers and dies. Yet when you give it away, it multiplies exponentially.
It sounds like Alan, Augustine, Frank, and Karen together weren't able to save the company. Does that mean those four leadership styles are not really effective?
We emphatically do not mean to negate or diminish any of these approaches to leadership. Every one of them is powerful and effective. Vision, empathy, grounding, soul, or as Kim, the martial arts teacher, puts it, mind, connection, flow, honor. But no one key alone opens the lock of great leadership. Life is hard. Times change. Challenges are inevitable and ruthlessly recurrent, which means that no matter what you've accomplished up to this point, you cannot afford to rest on your laurels. Our point in having Alan, Augustine, Frank, and Karen come to this critical juncture was that even the best leadership principles can falter without the continual rejuvenation of perspective and fresh air that comes by being a giver. You could definitely create a powerful, successful leadership career using any one of these four approaches. Many have. Ultimately, though, that success won't last or reach its full potential without key number five.
You contrast giving leadership with taking leadership. Are you saying that taking leadership is a bad thing?
Not necessarily. Sometimes, especially in difficult times or when important things aren't getting done, stepping up to the plate and taking leadership can be exactly the right thing to do. Some of the greatest people in history are those who were courageous enough to take leadership when nobody else was doing it. But taking leadership, as in grabbing the reins, seizing control, asserting dominance, when that means squashing or walking over others, can be entirely the wrong thing to do. This is a very similar question to the one we often hear about the go-giver. Are you saying it's bad to be a go-getter? Not at all. We love go-getters. Go-getters show initiative, take action, get things done. The ideal thing is to be a go-getter and a go-giver. In the same way, it's great to be someone who is not afraid to take leadership when the situation calls for it. But it's even better to be someone who is bold enough to take leadership and bold enough to give it, too.
Is giving leadership the same thing as servant leadership?
They're certainly cut from similar cloth. You can look at giving leadership in two ways. It's a noun, or more accurately, an adjective, like servant leadership, a particular kind of leadership. A leadership style that focuses not on holding oneself up and seizing the limelight, but on holding up other people. At the same time, it is also a verb, to give leadership to others.
I know Ben's friend Claire is the same Claire who appears in the last chapter of The Go-Giver, and the Rachel she talks about is the same Rachel who worked for Pindar. Are there any other story connections to The Go-Giver here?
The big local nonprofit where Claire works is, of course, the Rachel's Famous Coffee Foundation. In fact, Claire is offered this position in the last few pages of The Go-Giver. The cafe up the street from Alan and Augustine, where Ben meets Claire and Aunt Elle for lunch, is Iafrates, where Joe meets Ernesto in The Go-Giver and learns about the first law of stratospheric success. We even meet the same maitre d', Sal, in both books. On the very last page of The Go-Giver, Claire is just about to visit Iafrates for the very first time. Looks like she's now become a regular. In The Go-Giver, Joe learns that when Rachel was hired, she quickly became a hit with a steady stream of business associates who passed through Pindar's home, including the CEOs of some of the nation's largest companies. One of those CEOs was Aunt Elle. In The Go-Giver Leader, Aunt Elle quotes Pindar's Law of Influence, the third law of stratospheric success, which is the foundation of this story, and Claire reveals more about Pindar's history to Ben. Finally, on Ben's pensive walk through town, he passes a series of landmarks that mark Joe's journey in The Go-Giver. The Liberty Building, where Sam Rosen has his top floor office, with the same view of the western mountains that Alan has in his office. The Auditorium, where Joe hears Deborah Davenport talk about authenticity. And Rachel's Famous Coffee itself. And that walk begins, of course, at Ernesto's Cafe, where Joe's journey to learn the five laws began.
Isn't it a little unrealistic to think that Ben's son Robbie would get a martial arts black belt at age 11?
Unusual, maybe, but not impossible. John's son Nick got his black belt in Taekwondo at age 11.
I have the sense that Ben would never have gotten to the place he did without listening to Melanie and Robbie.
We do, too. The mark of a great leader, in our view, is that you are able to put your ego aside and listen to the people around you.
I was surprised we didn't get to see Pindar in this story. Will he be back again at some point?
We didn't directly include Pindar in this story because we thought Aunt Elle could hold her own in the wise mentor department. And the truth is, while Pindar may not appear here in person, he is never far from view. Aunt Elle quotes him, of course, and Claire tells us a bit about his early days. Ben says meeting him is one of his biggest dreams. And even when others aren't talking about Pindar directly, he's still there, hovering just behind the scenes. The statue in the center of the city of the four blind men interpreting the elephant was put there by Pindar. And don't forget Alan and Augustine's first chair, the chair Alan designed and Frank made, the one about which Alan says the only reason we still have it is that we gave it away. Again, Pindar's paradox. That chair, which becomes Ben's at the very end of the story, is itself a stand-in of sorts for Pindar himself, who is, after all, called the chairman. As far as whether or not Pindar will be back in person, we can't say for sure, but we wouldn't be at all surprised. This is Bob Berg. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Go-Giver Leader, a little story about what matters most in business, previously published as It's Not About You, by Bob Berg and John David Mann. This program was directed by Kathy Thornburn, executive producer Diane McKiernan. Text copyright 2011-2016 by Bob Berg and John David Mann. Production copyright 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.